Hello, and welcome to the Phone Booth, the Georgetown Voice's long-awaited rebirth of our basketball podcast. I am your host, Tyler Parikh, and I am joined today by our illustrious panel of basketball gurus. We have the Voice's editor-in-chief, Mr. Kevin Huggard.
Hi there.
We have sports writer and halftime aficionado, Nick Gavio.
How you guys doing?
And we have our other resident basketball guru, also a sports writer, Santul Nikar.
What's up, y'all?
So today we are bringing you guys a special Georgetown Hoops basketball season preview. So let's just jump right into it. Last season was not what anybody was expecting it to be. Some of the lowlights included losses to Monmouth, Radford, and UNC Asheville. Other than the obvious glaring losses on the team's record last year, what do you think the biggest problem around the team was?
I don't think there was good leadership. I think the fact is when your leading scorer is taking press conferences and talking about how people aren't buying into the team vibe, he's running the last plays of each game, getting people trying to move on offense and nobody's moving, there's a clear issue there. So I think on the surface it's cliche, but a lack of leadership was a huge part of the early season struggles.
I think there's been a lot of talk about injuries and the role that they played, and clearly there were injuries that were important last year. Paul White was out for much of the season. They lost Bradley Hayes for the second half of the season, among others, who were, you know, banged up for periods of play. And I think it can't be ignored, but I also think it's not nearly enough to explain why last year happened. For me, the defense was really the worst factor of last year, as much as the offense stalled at times and was over-reliant on certain players. I think the defense really struggled to get stops and to get key stops, and also to play solid fundamental defense without fouling. We fouled at an obscene rate last year, and it seems we're still somewhat struggling to adjust to maybe the new hand check rules. It's hard to tell, but that's what it seemed like to me last year with our defense.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think defense and the foul trouble was probably the biggest problem. Obviously, the offense was not great, but, I mean, it seemed like every single game, LJ Peak was at four fouls at the end of the game. A lot of games he fouled out, which led to him going to the bench, which actually seemed to be a good move. But, yeah, it seemed like the team didn't really adjust to the new defensive rules, and I would argue that that was definitely the downfall, just because a lot of key players were forced to miss pretty big stretches, and that affects both offense and defense.
I would add on to the defense part is that when you have such a terrible fouling rate, sometimes it's mitigated by the fact that you create turnovers. So if you're a team like West Virginia, which starts a lot of, you know, high-energy guards on offense, I mean, and on defense, creating turnovers, that can be good. But Georgetown also placed near the bottom of the entire NCAA in getting turnovers. So the fouls that you're like getting 30 feet away from the basket just displays a lack of fundamentals and perhaps even conditioning, honestly.
Yeah, I think another thing is they were sitting there, I think it was with 12 games left in the season. They had 8 losses, or was it, maybe it was like 10 or so. And we thought maybe if they could get like a couple wins over Villanova and Xavier and things like that, maybe they can. That's not what happened. They went 2-10 in their last 12 games, decided not to play in the postseason at all. Coach Thompson just decided to take the summer to rebuild the team. But what kind of bright spots did you see from the team last year?
Well, I mean, by the end of the season, it was clear the air had gone out of this team. Mm-hmm. I think that was obvious to anyone who was watching. For me, bright spots are hard to find. If I was going to pick one, maybe near the end of the season, LJ Peak emerged as a bench player. We all thought, I think, that he would be a starter and that he would continue to be a starter. He emerged by the end of the year as consistently a key contributor off the bench, which was a weird role to see him in, I think, but also a very effective one. So, I mean, who knows whether that will continue into this season. I think it might, but that was at least interesting and somewhat positive. Bradley Hayes, we saw flashes in 2 years ago in the tournament because of injuries of Bradley Hayes turning into a contributor. And last year we saw him become an effective scorer in the post. And, I mean, during his, you know, first couple seasons at Georgetown, I don't think anyone really saw that coming. So that was positive, and clearly his injury and his loss hurt us. Other than that, though, I struggled to see too much from last year that was positive.
Yeah, and I think Kevin mentioned earlier how Bradley Hayes was out for most of the second half of the season. That allowed us to see a lot of Jesse Govan, and I think he really impressed as a freshman. The first half of the season, he was mostly coming off of the bench, but he really stepped into that starting center role, and he was hitting threes. He was scoring in the post. He was rebounding. He was very impressive to me, filling in for Hayes down the stretch there.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, being tested by the fire of last year is certainly going to help last year's freshman this year. Seeing what Jesse Govan could provide, Marcus Derrickson, yes, it was like a really tough year for them. But at the same time, they're going to have the experience of the pain and anguish of those losses, and hopefully it will lead them to better things this year.
Yeah, I would agree with most of those points. Jesse very much showed off his skill, especially on the perimeter. He was statistically, if you're looking at the percentages, he only took 24 three-pointers, but he did make 50% of them, which is very encouraging. Bradley's back for another year. He was granted a year from the NCAA, a fifth year, but he's going to be out for the first four games of the season because he did play some his freshman year. And LJ will probably, I think most of us project that he'll stay in that six-man role because he really did flourish in that position. But it's rare that a team has its worst season in 44 years, only loses one guy, and gains as many players as this team is gaining. We have players like transfer Rodney Pryor, who this is his sixth collegiate season. He had to sit out 2 years in community college due to season-ending injuries. There's Jonathan Mulmore, a transfer from Allegheny College of Maryland, who led the nation in the junior college ranks for scoring and assists. There's Jagan Mosley, the only scholarship freshman on the team from St. Patrick's in New Jersey. And there's Akoya Gao, who was here last year, had to sit out due to injury, but this is going to be his debut season. Many project him to be a good defensive stopper. What encourages you guys about the newcomers on the team?
Well, for me, as discouraging as last year was, this season I am on the bandwagon, and I'm surprised to hear myself say it, but it's my senior year, and I really want this team to be successful, and I think they will be. This team is dangerous to me. There is a new mentality. There seems to be a new potentially style of play. There's a lot of chatter about speeding up the pace of play, and they seem to have the personnel to do it. Rodney Pryor, I saw a little bit of him in Kenner League over the summer. He looks confident. He looks like a leader. He also looks like a scorer. He looks like an effective, pure scorer and really an impressive athlete out there on the floor. Mulmore and Mosley both look like they can contribute. Mulmore especially I'm excited about because of his speed. And Akoy, I really don't know exactly what to make of him at this point, but I think it can't hurt. And he was, we should remember, a very highly touted recruit out of high school. So at this point, I mean, whatever contributions he can offer, I think it's only a plus.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like Tyler said, really only one contributor from last season left, which was Devontae's. And coming into this season, we're getting four that can contribute and have been added. So the biggest thing, I think, is just the depth of this team. Last season, you know, early on, a lot of people talked about Georgetown's depth, and obviously that didn't really turn out to bring any great things. But this year, it's even better, which I think is pretty insane. And a big thing was replacing Smith Rivera as a leader. And I think it's clear that Pryor has kind of come in now and taken a leadership role. Will he be better than Devontae's was at leadership? As Santul said earlier, I don't know. But these are a lot of really exciting acquisitions, and I think that they really will make an impact throughout the whole season.
Yeah, I think with Rodney, the one thing he provides is someone who's been there. 6 years in the collegiate ranks. 1 year when he was with RMU, they played Duke. He scored 23 points. I mean, the game got blown up by Duke, which had Jahlil Okafor, Justice Winslow. We know where those guys are. But he's someone who's been there, who's done that. And he also gives a certain versatility to Georgetown when it comes to the offense. When your primary scorer last year is also your point guard, it and who can double as a shooting guard, but who's undersized, it leaves you with not as much flexibility as you would want, especially when you go into Big East play and you're playing teams with dynamic guards like Chris Dunn. So if Devontae has to guard Chris Dunn, then that limits what he can do on offense as well. But someone like Rodney Pryor, who can score not necessarily from the point guard position, that allows your point guard to not just focus on scoring, but to focus on distributing, playing defense, and you have a lot more flexibility there, I think. And that's going to be one big change, I think.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with what you guys said about Rodney Pryor and Jonathan Mulmore. I think Jagan Mosley is really I don't want to say he's flying under radars, but of all the new people, I think he's getting a little bit of the least amount of hype. But I watched him in Kenner League play. He does not play like a freshman. He seems to have a very good, just natural feel for the game. Knows when to slow it down on offense and get his teammates involved. But he's a big guy. He has a lot of weight, like a lot of muscle on him. He's listed at 6'3", 205 pounds. And I think there's a good chance he could overtake Trey Campbell for this backup point guard position, just because of his natural feel for the game and his ability to get his teammates involved. There's a video circulating on social media of him dunking right over, I think it was like a 6'9" guy in Kenner League play. That got a lot of play. But I think he's somebody to watch out for. He's flying under a lot of radars, but I think we will see a lot of him this year, especially handling the ball.
Yeah, I think some of us who have been around for a few years following the program see Jagan Mosley and maybe in the back of our minds are thinking not quite the same position, but have a little bit of shades of Jabril Tarawick going on there. We can hope though, right?
We can most certainly hope for the saint of Jabril Tarawick to return to the Verizon Center. But one of the issues, if you want to call it an issue, this is probably a good issue to have if you're a team. You add all these players, there's a lot of roster uncertainty. Who's going to play? How do you sort out the position battles? Because there are definitely position battles going on. You have Bradley and Jesse fighting for the 5 spot. Mulmore, Mosley, Campbell all fighting for the 1. Who do you guys think is going to come out on top in some of those position battles? Who do you expect to see on the floor this year?
Well, I think we'll definitely see Bradley start. I mean, it's his senior year. It's his year, basically, I think. And he's a player who's worked really hard to get from where he's been to where he is now. But other than that, I think that I'm going to throw something out there that while it's important to see who starts, you want the flexibility to play with different types of lineups. And one thing I think that having all this depth will do is you can experiment with a big lineup. You can experiment with maybe a smaller lineup with something like Caleb Johnson at the 4. And I think the early season games, while there are some big ones where the experimentation might take the fans for a bit of a ride, I think you need to use those games to try and test out what works best, what doesn't work as good, and just keep defenses and offenses of the other teams guessing.
Yeah, I think with this team especially, there's a distinction that needs to be made between the starters and the 5 players who will end up being the most significant contributors. With someone like LJ Peak, he very well might not start. I think we all would expect LJ Peak to be among the 5 most important players for this team this year. Whether he'll be, you know, the most important shooting guard or the most important, you know, among the most important guards, you know, top 2 guards, we don't know yet. As far as starters, I think Rodney to me is a lock to start. I think Isaac Copeland at the 3 is a lock to start. From there, I think Mulmore will probably start from what I'm hearing, from the leanings we're getting out of whatever we're getting out of the team. Other than that, I think Jesse could start at 5. I'm not quite so sure on Bradley. And then, I mean, if it were up to me, Marcus would start at the 4. But it's hard to tell exactly. And, I mean, I think that is a good problem to have ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jesse definitely will start the first 4 games, as Tyler said, because Hayes is ineligible for those. And it'll just end up being a big question after those 4 games. I think if Jesse plays well, he very well might keep that position in the starting lineup. But, yeah, I totally agree that the starters really don't matter as much as the biggest contributors because, you know, we might see a lot of different lineups with this team. There's so much flexibility. There's so much depth. You know, with Hayes, a 7-foot center, and then you also have a Gal who's 6'9", but a lot more athletic, that can play the five if they want to go more up-tempo. There are so many options, and it really all depends on which direction JT3 wants to take the team.
One thing I do want to see is a team that can handle the press, like a lineup that can handle the press at the end of games, because anybody that watched Georgetown last year knows that that was a recurrent issue. And if games weren't lost because of that, they were made a lot closer than they needed to be. So getting, it's not just one player a lot of times, but practicing those situations in practice and getting everybody on the same page is really important.
So we've talked a little bit about who we think will start. Who do we think finishes games for this team? Because I'm not sure it's the same answer.
I think it depends on what, like with Santul just saying, you need somebody who can handle the press. I know Jagan Mosley is a freshman, but I think he's good at handling the ball. I think he could, he plays very mature from what I saw in the Kenner League. Now, I get that that's open, run and gun, willy-nilly, but he seems like he has a good head on his shoulders. Will JT3 trust him? I don't know. He'll probably go with a more experienced person who transferred in, like Jonathan Woolmore. I think Pryor is going to be on the floor. Copeland will probably be on the floor because he's been there and done that. And I think you have to have Derrickson on the floor because he knocks down free throws like it's nobody's business. Other than that, I don't really know who you put on at the end of the game other than Derrickson, Copeland, and Pryor as locks for me.
And the thing that I'm most curious about as far as players actually, or the player I'm most curious about is Caleb Johnson. Because he's someone I should have actually mentioned earlier when I said bright spots last year. He was someone who really impressed me. He has some obvious flaws to his game. He's offensively limited, and his free throw shooting, I think, was around 52% last year, which is for a guard, a guard slash forward. To be on at the end of the game really just isn't quite where it needs to be. I think if he improves as much as Coach Thompson has really talked up Caleb's improvement, that's been a point of emphasis for him. And if he really has made those strides, I think Caleb Johnson, we could be surprised at the minutes that he will get this year.
Yeah, going off of that, and end-of-game scenarios, I remember the Creighton game last year, actually, at home, where it was a big deficit last couple minutes, and that game was pulled out, won by DSR, but also the defense by Caleb Johnson on Mo Watson Jr., like, just haranguing him for all 90 feet. So even when it comes to end-of-game scenarios, there's, like, some flexibility there. Now, personally, on the offensive side, you have really good free throw shooters, so you want to get the ball into their hands. So maybe Caleb is not there for that. But you have, it's almost mind-boggling that they were so bad at end of games last year, considering that they could knock down free throws. I mean, like, just take the ball, get fouled, go to the line. But hopefully that's something that's been addressed over the offseason, and we'll see about it.
And who knows, maybe it's something where, like, Isaac and Caleb go offense, defense at the end of games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. So we've heard a lot of rumors about the up-tempo possibility coming into play. With this depth, do you think it would be useful for Georgetown to implement a full-court press? They did it at times last year, and it seemed to work relatively well. Now that they have the like John Thompson has said, this team is by leaps and bounds more athletic than they were last season. Do you think that means we'll see more press, or do you intend, what do you think we're going to see on the defensive end?
Yeah, so I wouldn't expect us to turn into, you know, the like the 40 minutes of hell teams of certain teams in years past, but I would expect much more full court press. I think, I mean, with a guy like Rodney Pryor, he's big, he's athletic. You can put Copeland out there, he's rangy, he can collect balls around midcourt that get thrown out there. You have someone like Caleb who can get his arms in the way of passes. To me, like, there's no reason they shouldn't press, and I think there's been talk about it, and it seems like a solid way to pressure teams at the end of games to force some turnovers.
I think Coach Thompson strongly believes in man-to-man, you know, good old Big East fundamentals, but I think he's also a student of the game, and he's going to look at something like what Coach Jay Wright did at Villanova last year, mixing up his defenses, and look where that got them. So he's very much a student of the game. He's going to look to see what best fits his personnel. And like Kevin said, when you have that type of length on defense, it almost seems like you have to utilize that into a 1-3-1 run and jump at the end of games. So I think we'll see more of that at the end of games.
Yeah, I agree for sure. I think that this Georgetown team is pretty much a really typical, they have the tools to be a typically pressing team. You have an athletic guard like Mulmore. You have an athletic big like a Gao that can defend the basket, and you have a do-it-all player like Pryor. I think that if you have those resources, you need to use them at least a little bit and cause some teams some havoc, because they're just too good to let them play half-court defense. And I think that could really be a strength if they choose to go that route.
It's interesting. The shortest player on Georgetown team, Trey Campbell, is listed at 6'2". So everybody on this team is taller than 6'2", and they want to run. That is scary to deal with in the open court for opposing teams.
This team has speed and size, and if they use it well, it could be a fun sight to watch for Georgetown fans this year.
Absolutely. So getting into the early season schedule for the Hoyas, we have a special segment that we are reviving from years past. Who's on the horizon at the Verizon? The first game of the season will be against...
That pun brought to you undoubtedly by Joe Polisino.
I was influenced greatly by Joe Polisino, yes. The first game of the season this Saturday will be against USC Upstate. Couple fun facts for you. USC Upstate was the NAIA National Champions in 1982.
This is a blue chip program. They have a pedigree, okay? I mean, all jokes aside, after last year, we don't discount anybody.
They play in the Atlantic Sun Conference, which some Hoya fans may remember, is home of the Florida Gulf Coast, I believe it's the Eagles. They took out the Otto Porter-led Hoyas in 2012.
Dunk City, right?
Fun story. That was actually, so that was the spring when I was deciding to go to Georgetown. And I was here for visiting for Gap Weekend. And I watched that game. It was, I think, a Friday night. And I was having a fun Friday. I went bought myself a Subway sandwich, went back to my hotel room, watched Georgetown lose. And
the rest is history.
The next day, I decided to attend there. So I don't know what that did it, but it was a depressing day to be on campus.
And the second leading returning scorer for USC Upstate is Mike Cunningham, DC native. They lost to the University of Maryland by 10 points 2 years ago. They are a public school in Spartanburg, South Carolina. It costs about $5,300 to go there if you're an in-state resident, $1,200 to go if you're out of state. And if you're looking for an informatics degree, USC Upstate might just be the place for you.
Love that. That is thorough.
We do our research
That's
here.
Why we have the research department. Yeah, okay? That's what the interns are for, all right? It's not just coffee. We give them substantive work.
So after last season's collapse against Radford in the opening game, do you think the Hoyas will be more cautious this year? Do you think they're going to use this game as an experimenting kind of time?
I mean, look, there is definitely room to experiment for this team, especially with all the ideas that we and others have thrown out there as far as what this roster could do. But I don't think there's any chance that this Georgetown team is discounting early season non-conference opponents. After the losses last year that we saw, it would be ridiculous. It would be absurd if they thought that any game was a lock. So, I mean, we could see some different lineups, but in terms of, you know, attitude, in terms of how they're thinking going into the games, it better not be like it was last year.
I see the potential for overlooking it, but by that same logic, you really don't want to lose to this team. I mean, KenPom predicts them to be 239th this year. That's behind the likes of Idaho State, Sacramento State, Drake, Wright State, Lipscomb. Like, these are not good teams. So this is obviously a must-win. It feels really redundant to say that, but also keep in mind that after this game, you play Maryland. Then you play Arkansas State. Then you go to Maui, where there's a potential you're going to play three ranked teams. So this is really just checking it off the list. That doesn't give you an excuse to overlook it, but I would be very, very surprised if Georgetown even came close to dropping this game.
Yeah, this isn't a game that is necessarily going to build too much momentum, but it could very much take momentum away.
Yeah, so after this game, USC Upstate will look forward to a date with Mars Hill on Monday the 14th, and then they will play UNC Asheville, which Hoya fans will also cringe at the mention of that name, as the Hoyas lost to UNC Asheville at home last year.
A lot of Hoya cringing in this podcast.
Yes, we are so sorry about that. But as Santul mentioned earlier, the second game of the season, the Hoyas will be hosting Maryland. That is going to be on Tuesday the 15th. at the Verizon Center, 6:30 p.m. tip. What do you guys expect to see out of that game? Given how close last year's game was, Georgetown leading much out through much of the second half, Rashid Suleiman hits a three in the corner, and from there we're kind of playing catch up with the minute left. What do you expect to see in this game?
I mean, I think it's going to be a great game. I think Maryland, I think they're ranked 25th. You have Melo Trimble returning. He's really, really, really good. And, you know, it had a lot of emotion last year, I think. This is kind of a DC rivalry that never really was. When was the last time they played before last year?
I think in regular season play, it was in the 90s. They played in 2008 in the tournament. I don't know where the tournament... It was the Old Spice Classic. They played in 2008, but before that, none... In the regular season, it wasn't until like 1991 or something, I believe.
Yeah, so like bringing it back to DC on the home courts, I think this is going to be an emotional game. There will be a lot of hype around it by both Maryland and Georgetown fans. And I think that both teams this year have pretty high expectations and are pretty good. One thing to watch though, Melo Trimble got hurt in one of their preseason games. So will he play? That would be a huge loss for Maryland if he can't go.
I think if Georgetown plays like they're supposed to, and if Maryland plays like they're projected to, I really don't think Maryland will stay that close in this game. I look at Maryland, they're losing their entire front court, Diamond Stone, Robert Carter, Jake Lehman. Obviously the keys were already with Melo Trimble, but he's coming off a really tough year, injury, and I look at this Maryland roster and I don't see what else there is. Now the same thing could be said about Georgetown based on their performance last year. But given that this game is at home, I think the hype and the momentum is on the side of the Hoyas.
Yeah, I think definitely on paper the Hoyas have a much deeper team. Obviously, we need to wait and see how that translates to the court, because last year it didn't. I think we're all pretty optimistic that things will be better this year, but we can't be sure just yet.
I would agree with everything that you guys said. And the Hoyas will look forward to, as Santul mentioned, also a trip to Maui where they will take on Oregon in their first game. And after that, Maui's a tournament, so we don't necessarily know who they will play. We will get into that more next week as that tournament approaches. So, you know, to finish off our segment on the men's team, what do you guys see realistically coming out of this season? Or maybe your biggest fantasy. What do you see coming out of this season? Where are the Hoyas going to end up?
Well, my biggest fantasy, I mean, I have three siblings, all of whom either graduated from or currently attend Villanova University. Last spring was a tough time for me. I didn't do too well at the dinner table. So my biggest fantasy would be that. Would be for last spring to get reversed. I don't see that happening. I think this roster, though, is significantly improved from last year. And if they make the strides that it appears they have made, I think Sweet 16 is reasonable. That, to me, is where I could see this team ending up. And look, I mean, for a Georgetown team that hasn't got that far in a long time, that would be a very good result.
Yeah, I think pretty much same thing. I mean, this team has a lot of potential, and on paper it looks like they should be really, really good. And the only reason I'm hesitant is that we said that last year. So I'm kind of struggling right now with how optimistic I want to be with this. I think early on, you know, they do have, like you said, Maryland and going to Maui. They have a lot of tests early on. And then mid-December, after a few cupcakes, they head to Syracuse, and that'll be another huge game. So I think we'll be able to tell kind of early on if this team has changed. I think, obviously, as the season progresses, it'll improve, just like any season. But expectations, I think Sweet 16 is definitely possible. I agree with Kevin.
So definitely a tournament team?
I think that barring unforeseen disaster, they should be locked as a tournament team.
I agree.
I have three levels for this. One is their worst case scenario, which I think would be missing the tournament, because they were not even close to making the tournament last year, and conceivably that could happen this year if things went really bad. Best case scenario, I see them, everybody reaching his potential, 3 or 4 seed in the NCAA tournament, 2nd place in the Big East behind Villanova. I think a middle approach or a middle ground will be around a 7 or 8 seed. Get to the round of 32, who knows, maybe spring an upset. But I think Sweet 16 is a decent goal to have. If that happens, and it's all about building momentum. What does this mean for the future of Georgetown basketball as well? So taking that long view, a Sweet 16 would be great.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Sweet 16 is a realistic goal. I think the curse will finally be broken and we'll get out of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2007. I think that's a realistic goal. But I hate to say it. I'm very much in on the bandwagon. Every year you think, oh, this is the year. And then after last year, I told myself I wasn't going to do it again. But here I am. I'm feeling pretty good. My heart is telling me this is an Elite Eight team. My mind is telling me absolutely not, because that's not Georgetown. We always seem to have bad luck in March. But if all goes well, hopefully my heart is correct. But I think we all agree that this team should be in the NCAA tournament. Like, we are pretty absolutely confident they'll be in the NCAA tournament.
And, okay, so Big East, we should say, because I left that out.
Oh, yeah.
You had mentioned Decentral. I think probably third place in the Big East is the most likely spot that we end up in, if things go the way I expect them to.
So who finishes ahead? Villanova?
Villanova, Xavier.
Xavier.
Okay. Yeah, Villanova, Xavier. I mean, we're in that bunch with Creighton, with who else is right there?
Seton Hall.
Seton Hall's right there.
Providence is going to fall off.
Yeah, Providence is going to fall way off. Marquette won't be anything threatening.
St. John's might.
St. John's kind of a wild card because they have some young talent.
They have talent.
Right, they have some young talent, but they just need to put it together, and I'm not quite sure they're there yet.
Yeah.
We'll see what Chris Mullen can string up there. That's my guy.
I'm rooting for them, you know. It would be nice to see them
come back. See the Johnnies back on top, get the rivalry going back again.
It would be nice to see them become relevant again. But, yeah, that's where I see them.
I think top three in the Big East is a realistic expectation. I don't see them knocking off Villanova. But I think Xavier, we could definitely challenge.
Yeah.
I think outside of Edmund Sumner, and I believe they still have Trevon Blewett.
Yeah, it's Blewett and Sumner.
They're much smaller now. They lost Jalen Reynolds, and I don't know if they have the size to match up with a Georgetown team.
I think Creighton goes number two, actually. I think adding Marcus Foster with Watson is going to be a really tough combination.
Well, that is a lethal backcourt.
Yeah. Mo Watson is very good.
Mo Watson, I think, is one of the more underappreciated players in the country.
He's smart. He's so smart.
No, Mo Watson just has destroyed us in the past.
Absolutely.
I will say, as far as Xavier, I agree with you with the size element. I think they've bullied us a little bit in the past when it comes to their size, with their famed Uber driver Matt Stainbrook and others. But I think this year, I mean, we probably can reverse it a little bit, turn around on them.
We will see. So that's going to conclude our men's season preview. So we think that this team has the potential to be a Sweet 16 team, crossing our fingers, and hopefully a top three finish in the Big East. But I think we can all agree that this is, for a team that just went 15-18, I don't know if there's much more excitement going into the season, because I think there's just so much different. Rumors of the faster pace of play, JT3 kind of confirming in preseason press conferences that is going to be the case. Players indicating that's going to be the case. There's just a lot to take in.
There's a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty, and
I think we have a decent picture of what we think is going to happen, but we have no real confirmation that will be the case.
Fasten your seatbelts.
I was going to say, before we turn to the women's team, I know you have some takes as far as the uniforms this year.
Yes, these new uniforms.
So they've unveiled the men's team some new uniforms in the past couple weeks, and I know our boy Tyler here has some thoughts.
I got takes.
Yeah, he has takes.
I like the cut. You know, the shoulder blades are exposed. It's kind of that Duke style now, very minimalistic. But we have kente cloth, and it literally looks like Nike took a third grade stencil, shoved it on the side of the uniform, and spray painted it on there. I don't know how we have Jordan Brand providing us with our uniforms, and we get stuff that looks like an eighth grade team could end up wearing them. DIY, do it at home thing. Like the cut, but come on, we have kente cloth. Let's go back to the 90s for a minute, please.
So I also have some thoughts. I'm not quite as negative on the way that kente was done as Tyler is. I think the uniform as a whole looks very clean, and I appreciate that, because I think, especially in the uniforms of, you know, the late 2000s into 2010 to like 2013-ish, they were kind of cluttered, and they looked just awkward as uniforms. They had these weird shoulder stripe things that I thought looked stupid along the collarbone. A lot of stuff going on that I didn't love. These are clean. They look classic, even though they're new. I just wish that the kente was a little, it's been made almost a little bland here, and I wish it wasn't.
Quick, what do you guys think of the baby blue uniforms?
I cannot wait.
I think one or two times a year, it's a fun thing to do. And I will say, I still think that our our, you know, quasi throwback gray uniforms are still the best uniforms we have.
Yes.
And we should wear them throughout any postseason play that we are in.
I would agree with that. So switching gears to the women's team now, there is a lot of, this team has turned it around in the recent years. I believe when Coach Natasha Adair was hired 2 or 3 years ago, the team had 4 wins in her first season.
Mm-hmm.
Last year they made it to the NIT. This year they have 2 players named to the all preseason Big East team, Deanna White and Dorothy Adamako. Nick did a lot of research on the team for the basketball preview. What do you think here?
Yeah, so I think that from last year to this year, we saw a lot of front court turnover. I think 3 seniors were either forwards or centers. Like Tyler said, the returning Adamako and Deanna White, both of whom were extremely successful last season. But the biggest question is their front court. They've got a few. They have a sophomore, Jody Marie Ramil, who was a freshman last year, and she could step in. They also have a junior college front court transfer, Cynthia Petke. She honestly might take that starting 5 spot. She's athletic. She's a rebounder. Coach Adair always talks about getting on the floor, hustling. She seems to fit that mold almost perfectly. Really could bring down some boards and be a bruiser up front for the Hoyas. I think from this team, what we'll see is, like I just said, Coach Adair is really stressing, hustle, plays. She thinks those really decide the game. And I think that this Hoyas team could really kind of fit that mold of, your signature hustle, get on the floor, do all the little fundamental things, and kind of ride that to a really, really successful season.
Yeah, and as much as we've talked about the versatility of the men's team, when our reporters talked to her for the basketball preview that we have coming out in print, Coach Adair really emphasized that this team can play small, they can play big, they're going to come out, they're going to throw different matchups at teams, they're going to throw different lineups out there, and they have the personnel to confuse opponents a little bit and to throw off defensive schemes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think last year we saw strides, especially what was really promising was the play of Deanna White as a freshman starting at point guard. She was able to get into the lane, distribute the ball, play really tough defense and things like that. That is promising for the upcoming season. And then the influx of just all these new players, as Nick highlighted. I think this team is versatile. I think what was encouraging about last season was they had those 4 wins in Coach Adair's first season. Well, they had a 4-game win streak last season. They won the same amount of games that they won in an entire season in one stretch last year. They have the ability to put the pieces together and ride a nice wave. They only lost on a buzzer. I think they lost on a buzzer beater to Rutgers in the NIT, and Rutgers was considered the best team in the tournament in the NIT that year. So that gives the team definitely a sense of encouragement going into the season.
Now, this is a team and a program that's making significant strides over the past few years, and I, for one, would expect them to continue to do so. I don't think it's out of the question at all to see a tournament berth, and maybe even a run. We'll see. But this is a program that I think is very much going in the right direction, and over the time I've been here, I've been very impressed with what Coach Adair has managed to do.
Yeah, I mean, their non-conference schedule is pretty loaded. There's no real cupcake teams in here. They start off with the D.C. battle against George Washington at home Friday night. Then they'll play at Virginia Tech, at Minnesota. They'll play teams like Penn State and Delaware. They met Delaware last season. They met Virginia Tech last season. These are teams they've played. These are teams that are going to be good competition, get them ready for the Big East play. And I think what Kevin said is correct. Like, I think this, I believe a NCAA tournament berth is certainly not out of the question. And if they can get the pieces, they can fit the pieces together correctly, we could see a run.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the biggest thing about their non-conference schedule is that a lot of these games are away. They're at Virginia Tech, at Minnesota, at Florida International, at Towson, at Delaware. This isn't a cupcake non-conference schedule. We're seeing them challenge themselves, and I think that's really a testament to what Coach Adair is trying to do with this program. Also, just a quick point on the roster. They got a really, really good transfer, Michaela Venson. She's ineligible this season. She came from Virginia. Last year, she led UVA in scoring. Not this season, but just as a look ahead to next year. She could be a really big boost pairing with Deanna White in the backcourt, and I think that's going to be a really, really dangerous duo.
So there's a lot of promise on the Hilltop this year between the men's and the women's team. I'd like to thank you all for listening to the inaugural edition of the Phone Booth by the Georgetown Voice. Our basketball preview edition will be out around campus and distributed some of the basketball games starting on Friday. You can find the entire issue online on Friday as well at georgetownvoice.com. And you can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow The Voice at GTownVoice. You can follow The Voice Sports at GU Voice Sports. You can follow Halftime GU, which is a blog dedicated to professional sports, but it also deals with some Georgetown sports.
As well as leisure topics.
As well as leisure topics. There are movie reviews and things of that nature. We have. You can follow me on Twitter at Tyler_Peree. That's P-E-A-R-R-E. You can follow Kevin on Twitter at, what is your handle, Kevin?
You can follow me at Kevin Huggard. That's K-E-V-I-N-H-U-G-G-A-R-D.
And Nick?
You can follow me at Nick Gavio. Warning, I tweet a lot of dog pictures.
So. You can be my eighth follower at SantulN, S-A-N-T-U-L-N.
That is an enticing proposition. Don't pass that up, listeners.
And you can listen, you can subscribe to The Voices Podcast Network on iTunes. It's The Phone Booth. We have the 250. We have all kinds of podcasts going up pretty much daily at this point.
Yeah, we have lots of different topics. They're a lot of fun, dealing with a whole range of issues. Even if you're not into basketball, you'll find something you'll enjoy.
All right. Thank you for listening.
Anyway, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for joining us.